Welcome to Music from the Tower, highlighting the beauty of sacred and classical music. We come to you from the Tower of Hope on the magnificent campus of Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove, California. Now, here's your host, John Romeri.
And this is Music from the Tower, and this is your host, John Romeri. And today we have one of the most anticipated programs in our whole Music from the Tower history. Today we have Maestro Carl St. Clair.
And you can call me Carl, John. It's just so great to be here.
Well,
thank you. I've looked forward to this.
I can't tell you how much we've been looking forward to it. And as I told you earlier today, we've been talking about you in almost every episode, so it's about time you show up.
Well, many of your guests have been dear, dear friends of mine and supporters of mine throughout my 28 years of being in Orange County, so I would talk about them as much as them about me.
Well, and for all the folks out there in Radio Land, we want everyone to know who Carl St. Clair is. For those two people left on the planet that don't know who he is, Carl St. Clair is the conductor for the last 28 years of the Orange County Symphony, or the Pacific Symphony. And what a treat it is to have you here. It's just amazing. I can't believe it myself.
Well, it's wonderful to be with you, John, and with all of your loyal listeners. And yes, it's been a real blessing to have had the opportunity to be the musical leader of the Pacific Symphony for such a long tenure. That's quite unusual in our business, as you well know.
It's probably one of the longest tenures, if not the longest tenure, of any conductor.
Of an orchestra of our size, I think it might be.
I bet you it is.
But it's the relationship that has continued to grow, not only with the orchestra and its wonderful musicians, but the board of directors and all the staff, but most importantly, with our community. The Pacific Symphony and Orange County are almost, I always think of them as like high school sweethearts who are growing into adulthood, sort of hand in hand, walking into this relationship, because each step that we have taken has been one that has been so welcomed by the community, and so it's been a real great opportunity for me and the symphony to be here.
Beautiful Symphony Hall is the product of that marriage between Orange County and this wonderful symphony. I must tell you that moving here from Philadelphia, it was the biggest fear I had. I was a season subscriber of the Philadelphia Orchestra, one of my favorite orchestras in the world. Good. And when I moved to Philly, everybody goes, "Oh, what's your favorite thing here?" And I'm sure they were expecting me to say the cathedral, my program at the cathedral, all of these things. And every time I would immediately say being able to hear the Philadelphia Orchestra live. So I wasn't here about 2 weeks, and somebody was so kind to invite me to come to hear your symphony, and it happened to be the weekend Paul Jacobs was here. That's the first time we met. And I came back afterwards to see Paul, who is a dear friend of both of ours. And there you were, and I met you for the very first time. But I was so blown away by the quality of our symphony. It's fabulous, Carl.
And
that's because of you.
Well, right? We're working hard, and because of the wonderful musicians and the dedication that they really have to creating a great orchestra. I mean, when you think of orchestras, we're about to celebrate our 40th anniversary next season. So in orchestral life, that's like
baby steps.
I mean, we're just we don't even know what and who we're going to be when we grow up. What the Pacific Symphony's accomplished in less than four decades of life is in the orchestral world fairly renowned, and so we're very, very happy. But it could not have happened without the musicians, their wonderful talents, but the support of our community.
Well, and I think you mentioned it, but you can't discount it at all, the fact that you have been there. You know, I know in my own life, I was 18 years in one cathedral and 19 years in Pittsburgh, and being there a long time, you really do watch your program grow. You know, and all of the opportunities that having someone there a long time affords. And having you here all this time, I was the organist for the St. Louis Symphony. During my 14 years there, we had three different conductors, you know, and all that entails, having to get used to a new person. One we loved, one we didn't like, you know, the next one we loved to death. You know, it made all the difference. But having that consistency must be amazing.
It really has, I think, kept the symphony on a philosophical tact which has not wavered. And that's about making music honestly, making music for the right purpose, that it serves the composer, it serves the art form, but almost as equally as important, if not more so, it serves the community which supports it. My whole mantra has been, we cannot be internationally renowned until we're locally acclaimed. So we really have...
Great saying.
We've really worked hard to become Orange County's orchestra and the pride of music in Orange County, and that we have, as a part of our budget, I think we spend close to 9% of our total budget on education, outreach, and community embracing. The national norm, I could be off of small, is somewhere around 2%, 1 to 2, 1.5 to 2%.
And you're at 9.
We just want to prove and just show, but it's also where our hearts are. I mean,
yes.
I'm a product of public school music education, and music education is something that we all feel very, very strongly about. And just providing the community all the musical experiences that they deserve to enhance this fabulous place that we live in called Orange County.
Yes, Christ Cathedral definitely wants to be more involved in that. I was just speaking to the president of your board about educational outreach right here on our campus. We have a wonderful children's choir. We had 105 at our children's choir camp in the summer. And, you know, just getting more and more involved with the symphony, all of those things, you can't have a gift like music and not give it away.
Well,
you know, you just have to pass it on. It's our job.
Isn't that, I mean, it enhances our life. I mean, the real purpose of music isn't just to listen to something. It's to enhance the life God has given us, and somehow or another to lift us up, to lift our spirits. So if we don't perform music with that in mind, that purpose in mind, somehow or another we're not disrespecting, but we're shortchanging what music's purpose and our existence actually is.
That's it. That's exactly right. You know, it's not that it wouldn't be beautiful for beauty's sake, but if it doesn't go beyond that and touch the soul and touch the hearts of all those, and every single performance I've been to, including this past summer's Tchaikovsky extravaganza, was just off the charts.
Yeah.
It was just fabulous.
Well, that's the other thing. You know, we're performing free concerts in city parks in Mission Viejo and Irvine and Newport Beach and other communities within Orange County. We do our outside summer programs. We have our large education and outreach programs. We have three youth ensembles, a Pacific Symphony Wind Ensemble, a Pacific Symphony Youth Orchestra, and a Pacific Symphony String Orchestra for middle school. And we have any number, our Class Act program, our Arts Express program, our Family Concert program. So we just provide music. If it has to do with music, we just want to be a part of it because it's in our blood and it's in our hearts.
Well, and we certainly want you in residence all the time at Christ Cathedral. Well, we're going to be fighting like crazy to get you here as much as we can, including our dedication week. You know, we've been talking about
what an exciting
already.
Moment that's going to be
it's
for
be
all of us Catholics
amazing.
And for Orange County and for the Catholic
right.
faith in general.
Well, and way beyond the Catholic faith. You know, we're so proud that it's going to be a Catholic cathedral, but the good news about Crystal Cathedral is it was really the world's cathedral.
Yes.
You know, I mean, millions of viewers all over the world watch that show so faithfully. And, you know, now they're watching carefully as it becomes a Catholic cathedral. Will it have great music? Will it use that Hazel Wright organ? All of those things. Will it welcome the symphony? Will it be interdenominational?
Sure.
You know, all of those things the whole world is watching. My Facebook page has grown by 2,000 people. I have no clue who they are. So friends is really in quotes. But everybody wants to know, not just about my grandchildren, but they want to know about the Hazel Wright organ and the Crystal Cathedral as now it becomes Christ Cathedral. And so we're so happy, you know, to begin all these new partnerships with the symphony and with you, my friend. That's
thank you, John.
Absolutely part of it. Well, unfortunately, in this whole first half, we were going to talk about you. And
no, I'm happy that we.
I wanted every listener loves to know how someone like you, a maestro of such renown, worked with Leonard Bernstein, all of these great conductors. You've conducted every major symphony in this country. You are the principal conductor of our own Pacific Symphony, the principal conductor of the Costa Rica Symphony, the National Symphony of Costa Rica. You have such a reputation. You, little Texan,
yeah.
have worked in Berlin and Weimar and all over the place. And what led you to music to start with? What gave you that wonderful start? Where was that seed planted?
You know, it's interesting. My first memories of music are in two places. One is in the Hohheim Baptist Church, which we had about 27 members, and the back and front porch of various people's homes down on the Guadalupe River, where we lived in South Texas on a farm. And so it's really church and home music. I didn't hear a symphony orchestra until I was 17 years old, and I played in it. But music started officially in my life on my 6th birthday, when my mother promised to give me the best birthday gift ever. And I looked everywhere for it, and I couldn't find it. I looked in the neighbors' garages and the barns and everywhere, because she said it was going to be big and grand and the best I could ever give you. Comes my birthday, the day arrives, and she says, "Carl, you're getting piano lessons." And I thought, for a South Texas farm boy, that was a real bad omen. That was not what I was expecting. But little did I know, I didn't believe it at the moment, but it was the greatest gift she ever gave me. And my aunt became my piano teacher, and that's when my formidable music training started, when I was 6 years old, because it was a birthday gift that my mother gave me.
We're going to hear a lot more about that birthday gift, and we'll take you from 6 years old in our next segment. But tell us a little bit about this Bernstein piece.
So this is a little song with three verses that he wrote the text to, called Greeting, which meets for the first time his granddaughter.
Okay, and we'll be right back. This is Music from the Tower, and of course we have our wonderful guest and symphony conductor, Carl St. Clair. And right now we're listening to the piece, the rest of the piece, called Greeting by Leonard Bernstein. And of course, that was one of your great teachers, Carl. Tell us more about that.
I worked with Mr. Bernstein the last 6 years of his life, which was a moment in his life when he was really interested in imparting his knowledge and his talents to young composers, young conductors, young orchestras. And I happened to be one of the chosen few that had that great honor. When he died, a lot of people were doing all kinds of things, everything from Mahler symphonies to the Barbara Adagio. But in my closeness with him, I got to see a part and a side of him that not everyone had the opportunity to experience, and that was his childlike innocence and his absolute love of life and appreciation for life. So this is a little song with three verses that he wrote the text to, called Greeting, which meets for the first time his granddaughter. The last little verse, every time a child is born, for the space of that brief instant, the world is pure. For me, I find that so profound. And that we need to respect life, and we need to enjoy and to realize what a great gift God gives us for every second that we have. And this is something that I learned in my time with Mr. Bernstein, was the fact that every second he enjoyed it, every second he savored, every second he was investing, he was looking for people that he could talk to about and share his great gifts with. I first met Leonard Bernstein in the summer of 1985. When I was a conducting fellow at Tanglewood, which is the summer home of the Boston Symphony. And something about me, I don't think he'd ever met a conductor from Texas. He says, he walked into the room and literally, I'm not exaggerating, he goes, "Where's my cowboy from Texas?"
Isn't that great?
I mean, he hadn't been to Tanglewood for three summers, and this was like, walked into the conducting class, and that's what he wanted to meet me, because he had never met a conductor from Texas. And so from that point forward, and I don't know, for some reason, he just took an interest in me and really invested in me. And And he, in our last conversation, mentioned, you know, Cowboy, which was his name for me after that moment.
Isn't that great?
You know, it's your turn to fly the flag. You know, I've given you, I've invested in you. Now it's your turn to fly the flag. And what Mr. Bernstein was talking about at that time wasn't going out and having a big time career in Europe and all over the world. He was talking about giving back.
Mm-hmm.
He was talking about paying it forward, to share what I've shared with you. You now have the obligation.
Turn.
It's your turn to share with young musicians. And that's why I'm so dedicated to young musicians, young orchestras, young composers, young conductors, everywhere I have the opportunity. He was just one of these kinds of teachers that never forced you to do things the way he did them. He was always encouraging and allowing you to discover the musician you were, not try to be the musician he was. Because for it, well, that would have been futile, because
impossible
because it was such a wonderful experience, because when you got the opportunity to see music through his eyes, your own vision and understanding of music, the playing field became so
bigger,
much wider. Yeah.
Wow.
The breadth of it was just so special. And
I can imagine.
And he just gave endlessly, tirelessly to anyone that was willing and to take what he gave you. And I was the best at just listening and taking everything that he gave me.
Well, I was fortunate enough only to sing under him once. We did the Harmonia Mass of Haydn together. And with the Westminster Choir College,
right.
And then we actually made a recording of that. So getting to watch him work with the symphony and then watch him in a recording sessions was an amazing experience. I'll never forget it ever, but it was all about imparting. You know, you could just see him doing his TV show during the entire thing. You know, he was teaching us young little students from Westminster Choir College all that time. You know, it's just, well, in our previous segment, we left you off at a six-year-old about to get piano lessons, and now we've got you studying as a conductor at Tanglewood. Fill in a little bit of the middle.
Well, it's interesting, you know, because when I was in South Texas, in this town of 36 people, Hoheim, Texas, I mean, the idea that on August 19th, 1990, at Tanglewood, I would be premiering Leonard Bernstein, who at the time I didn't even know who he was, or this great composer and conductor, that I would be conducting the premiere of his last work at what ultimately became the last concert of his life. That's a life path that you really can't preordain.
Yes, you can't.
No, let me put
it out right.
That probably was
already preordained,
but it's not something you can sort of sketch out. You can't plan it. And so, as a young piano player, I composed my own pieces. I played in a rock band like everybody did in the 60s. I was in the high school marching band, in the high school polka band and jazz band, and I played the trumpet and I played piano. And then I went to the University of Texas, and I was there for 6 years, and I studied opera conducting. And that's where I really heard and played orchestras for the first time.
Wow.
And that was a unique experience to me, the first time to hear Mahler and Wagner and Beethoven and Brahms and all these Mozart and all these great operas by Verdi and Puccini. I mean, I was just so disappointed that no one had told me before that all this great beauty had existed.
Yes, yeah. It's like this whole world's out there. And how did we not know that?
Right.
When I went from the University of Pacific to Westminster Choir College, it was like the same thing. All of a sudden, there was all this Anglican church music that, you know, Westminster was just enthralled in, and I'd never heard a note of it. I'd never heard King's College. I'd never heard any of that. You know, how could that happen, little boy from California here?
Exactly. When I took my wife for the first time to Hoheim, Texas, she's looking around, and with an incredibly, Susan was like looking at me with such an inquisitive, befuddled look, and she finally came out with, she goes, "Carl, how did you get out of here? I mean, how did," because she knows me as Carl St. Clair, the music director of the Pacific
yes.
Symphony, general music director of the opera in Berlin. And I thought about it, because I realized it's a very honest question. And I said to her, I said, "Susan, I got on the wings of music and I flew out."
Well, and I grew up in a little town, Madera, and I feel the same, you know. I mean, what there planted that seed in me? But someone did, you know, somehow somebody sent you enough, whether it was your piano teacher or one of your high school teachers, to send you on your way to college to study as a musician, and away we went.
But I firmly believe that music is so blind, it lands in any heart that's open to it. It can find you anywhere, in any walk of life, in any sort of place or space. It found me in a town of 36 people in South Texas. It can find anyone in any place.
Well, Dudamel is another...
In Venezuela, example. Of course. Yeah. And really, for me, I constantly say this, that God's gift to me was the talent of being able to become the musician that I am today. My gift to him is how I use that talent. And so I think about that a lot. Am I honoring God? And I speak about this openly and publicly because I really believe it's a God-given talent, and that's his gift to me. And how I use it is my paying respect and for this great gift that he's given me.
Yes, and giving it away. Isn't it fun? You know,
makes it all the better.
Even coming here to Orange County and starting the Cathedral Choir, all of those, you know, I'll say, how many know this? Not a hand in the room. You know, and I'm thinking this old war horse, you know, by whoever, and not a soul knows it. Well, isn't it cool to just let all those people now, not one person had sung Herbert Howells, not one person had, you know, and now we're doing it.
Correct.
So it's exciting, isn't it?
It really is. And, you know, Leonard Bernstein died on October 14th, 1990, and he's about to celebrate his 100th anniversary, August 25th of 2018. I was talking to an orchestra at a university, and I stopped mid-sentence, and I realized I was talking about Leonard Bernstein. Not a single person in the orchestra was alive.
Was alive. At
when he was still alive.
Exactly. I mean,
and how time so quickly passes.
It's not even in their wheelhouse. It's like other people will say, oh, you weren't alive when Kennedy, or, well, for us musicians, it's about, you know, were you there with Bernstein? You know, now we have people like Paul Solomonovich and all these other, you know, legends who are not going to be in the next generation's
Well, I've realized that I've become the youngest member of the oldest generation of American music director. I mean, because the generation or two older than me are almost extinguished. I mean, they're almost all passed on.
Right.
So I've realized that I have to accept this as a real responsibility, that I'm now in that older generation of American music directors.
Right, and if we don't share all of those gifts and all of those names and all of their compositions and all of our stories when we knew those people, our students won't have that to pass along. That's one of the great joys of having David Ball here, who, of course, is Paul Jacobs' student, but
sure,
before that was my organ scholar. So he was a little high school student with me.
Oh, and, my goodness.
You know, so he knows all of these people and all of these stories. You know, that I say he reminds me of them every now and then. But, well, we're going to hear another piece now.
Frank Ticelli. Frank Ticelli was my first composer in residence. I first knew Frank as a doctoral student at the University of Michigan, where I was a professor. And he's written a beautiful piece called There Will Be Rest, based on a poem by Sarah Teasdale. And this piece is dedicated to Susan and my son, Cole Carson St. Clair, when he passed away at 18 months. And I think you'll find some real peace and solace as we have. It has to be one of the most oft-sung pieces in the a cappella choral repertoire. There Will Be Rest by Frank Ticelli, a dear friend.
And we will be right back with a lot more from Carl St. Clair. Stay tuned. And this is Music from the Tower with my new favorite guest, Carl St. Clair. You could just go on for days and days here, and we definitely have to have you back. But I want to get in because our listeners have a great treat coming up right here in Orange County called the Cathedrals of Sound. Tell us about that program. Wow, what an intriguing name.
This is a particular program where we're going to perform the music of Anton Bruckner. Anton Bruckner was a devout Catholic who was an organist and a choir boy and at St. Florian, which is in the city of Linz, Austria. And he's also interned there. But he's also a composer of incredibly grand music. And his Eighth Symphony has sometimes been called the Apocalyptic Symphony.
By him.
Yeah, and it's right after the Seventh, which was glorious, and just before his final symphony, which was not completed, the Ninth Symphony. And so the reason I'm calling this Cathedrals of Sound is that we're going to try to turn the René and Henry Segerstrom Concert Hall, as beautiful and as wonderful as it is, into a cathedral-like atmosphere, because that's the type of sense that one has to have in order to appreciate and really receive Anton Bruckner's music with the deepest experience. So I've invited the Norbertine priest from St. Michael's Abbey to be singing and chanting Gregorian chant in the lobbies with special lighting. We have Christopher Bull, who is organist at UCLA, who is going to be performing music that Bruckner would have played as an organist on the William Gillespie organ inside. And so we're going to create this whole atmosphere that we're not necessarily only in a concert hall, but that we are sharing this piece in a sort of sanctuary feeling. And we're going to perform not only the Eighth Symphony, but Bruckner's very first work, which he wrote when he was 11 years old. It's a 28-measure motet, which is very, very sacred. And the whole purpose of this is to just think of yourself. You're white-knuckling down the 405 or the 5 freeway. You valet park. You rush in. You slush down some libation of some sort. You run to your seat. And then all of a sudden, you hear this incredibly slow-moving, slow-developing, but very powerful music. Your body is not ready for it. So the whole purpose of the Gregorian chant, the organ music, me talking about Anton Bruckner, his spirituality, his life, and the visuals that we've created, including visuals from St. Florian and it's going to allow people to hear this symphony in the right frame of mind and in with the right heart.
And when you open the walls to get all the echo that St. Florian has?
You know, that would be what everybody would say. We're going to open all the acoustical, you know, paneling. But, you know, that lets sound out. We're going to actually close all of the panels, which keeps the sound in and makes it sound more like a cathedral, as opposed to opening the walls and the panels and allowing the panels to escape out of the hall. We keep it in. So literally we have in René and Henry Segerstrom Concert Hall the chance of changing the reverberation so that it can actually sound like a cathedral. And that's what we'll be doing for Bruckner's Eighth Symphony.
Well, it's going to be amazing. That whole symphony is, it was the first one that he published actually before its first performance. And it has so many revisions. So whose revision are you performing?
We're doing the second version, which was from 1890. And I love this one because it enlarges the winds, the woodwind section, and it changes the ending of the first movement so that it's quite soft as opposed to the more forte, the louder version.
And the first version has this big expansive at the end of the first movement.
Yes.
Loud, bombastic.
And the reason I like this one is because it's very soft, but you can see Bruckner's awareness of the passage of time because there's this little motive that goes boom, bitadum, bitadum, bitadum in that sort of fashion. And across from his desk, writing desk, was a huge clock. And I think he was aware that time was passing and that his life on Earth. Because, you know, with Anton Bruckner, well, for most mortals like you and me, time begins at the beginning. You know, like when we're born, our time begins. For someone as devout as Anton Bruckner, the way he feels and the way he felt about time was his time began at the end. When his time began with God was the time that he really felt was the beginning of his time. This was a precursor to that eternity with his God. And his music takes that kind of patience and that takes that kind of resolve and constitution.
Well, what a glorious concert that's going to be. And, you know, Bruckner was always, you know, compared to Brahms versus Mahler versus,
right.
You know, there was always that Mahler was the one, you know, always thinking of death and these great, but yet Bruckner was the one always thinking of God somehow. There was a God theme, you know. Certainly his motets as a choral director, you know, that's, you know, they're all just gems, each one. Even the little Locus Iste, every single one is a gem.
And that's a key to hearing and appreciating the music of Anton Bruckner. You cannot expect from Bruckner's music what you get from Mahler or Tchaikovsky or Brahms or even Richard Strauss or even Wagner. It's not that romanticism that you know that with your heart is on your sleeve. His heart is bowed. It's knelt. Yeah, it's in front of God himself. So the spiritual quality of Bruckner's music is very different than the romantic spirituality of death and the drama of passion and yes. that you feel from Tchaikovsky. It's much different. So you can't expect the same sort of... That's why I'm spending so much energy in the concert itself to set up this... So that people can set up this atmosphere of a cathedral so that you can really experience this concert and this great symphony the way it's intended.
Your setup is going to be phenomenal. You're just not going to want to miss that concert. And it's coming right up. It's November 9th, 10th,
11th. 11th, yes.
Somewhere in there. I think I'm coming on the middle night. Can't wait. Wonderful. Well, there are many exciting things coming in the symphony this year, including a trip to New York.
We have April 21st. We've been invited to Carnegie Hall. Now, That's a big deal. See, now almost anybody could go to Carnegie Hall.
Exactly
if you
right.
if you want to rent Carnegie Hall.
This little goof is conducted in Carnegie Hall.
No, come on. But the point of it is to be invited to Carnegie Hall to be on their Carnegie Hall, the Carnegie Hall series. That's a different kind of honor, and we're really happy to go there and honor the 80th birthday of my dear friend Philip Glass, a composer that I've known since the early 80s and one that we commissioned the work that we're taking to open the Renee and Henry Segerstrom Concert Hall, our Pacific Chorale. I know you've had John Alexander and Rob Eistad.
Oh, they've all been
here. The Pacific Chorale is going with us. I commissioned this work to be one of the opening concerts of the Renee and Henry Segerstrom Concert Hall. It's called The Passion of the Ramakrishna. The Passion is a large work for big orchestra, five soloists, and the full Pacific Chorale, and we're all going to be on the stage of Carnegie Hall on April 21st. And
we're bringing half of Orange County with you. Exactly.
I hope that half of Orange County goes with us.
Well, I'm planning on coming. I can't wait. And it's not just one concert in the 80th birthday year of Glass. It's the final concert. They've saved the best for last.
Well, and it's been a complete year, a season of celebration. I mean, he's really one of America's most noted composers and an internationally renowned composer. And a dear person and someone that I care deeply about. So I'm really honored that because Philip had a lot to do, as well as Carnegie Hall, of who he would like to invite. And he knows the Pacific Symphony, the Pacific Chorale. And so we all feel very honored.
It's going to be such a great concert and such an honor for us. It's the very first time for Pacific Chorale to go, right? And the symphony.
It's the first time that it's the second time we've ventured out of California. We took our tour to Europe in 2006. But as you well know, going to Carnegie Hall is a mark of distinction.
There's a pilgrimage there, isn't
there? Absolutely. It's like going to the Vatican or something.
I know. There's a certain something. You know, every time you venture off with a choir, the first place you want to take them is Rome, and so my kids are going there this January. My adults are going in the summer, but the first place you want to take a symphony
Carnegie
is
Hall.
To Carnegie Hall.
Absolutely.
Right? I was honored to be the organist with the St. Louis Symphony when we went, and two or three times, and I'd beg our conductors to make sure there was an organ piece so I'd get to tag along. Well, I think we should listen to a little bit of perhaps the Philip Glass right now. What do you think? And then we'll end the whole show with the Bruckner.
Yeah, this is the prologue to Philip Glass's Passion of Ramakrishna, which he wrote, interestingly, while he was visiting Linz, Austria, the same home of Anton Bruckner.
Okay, a little tie to that. So this is the prologue, and if you want to hear the whole piece, you must go to New York, right?
Absolutely.
And we'll be right back with a lot more from our dear friend and guest, Carl St. Clair. Stay tuned. Don't go away. Thank you. And we are back. This is Music from the Tower, and we are here with the towering giant
Orange
County.
Please.
No, this is out of control. You can tell, Radioland, how excited I am that Carl is here. We're so honored that Carl is here, and we're so honored to have him here in Orange County. You have now given 28 years of your life to building this amazing symphony. Give us a little history of that. We talked in the last segment about the trip to Carnegie Hall. You briefly mentioned a tour to Europe. And so I want to hear about some of the beginnings, and I want to hear about some of the future.
Well, my beginning with the Pacific Symphony actually happened when I was the assistant conductor of the Boston Symphony. And it was the end of the season for the classical music, and John Williams, who was the conductor of the Boston Pops, was there to open the Boston Pops season. And I had worked with John during my 4 years, and this was in my final year as the assistant there, and this was in 1989. And John goes, Carl, you know, I've just conducted this fabulous orchestra in Orange County, California, called the Pacific Symphony. They're looking for a music director. They should know about you, and you should know about them.
Oh, how great.
So my introduction to the Pacific Symphony actually came from my dear friend and the world's friend, John Williams. And we made a call. My manager made a call, and I was invited, and I came and conducted in January of 1990. And within just a few weeks, we started discussions, and not very long after that, I became the music director of the Pacific Symphony.
Well, they knew what they were looking for, obviously.
Well, it was such a powerful experience for me, too. And that particular program, I remember, distinctly finished with the Tchaikovsky's Pathetique, which, as you know, is quite impassioned, and Tchaikovsky's last work, which he conducted just 9 days, the premiere, 9 days before he himself died. So it was very powerful, and that connection has remained till this day. A very, very strong connection with the musicians and with the community and with the board of directors. And I think one of the things that's helped the orchestra grow has been that in the 39 years of existence, it's had two executive directors or presidents and two music directors. Keith Clark was the founding music director. He had a great vision. It was founded in Fullerton. It was a kind of a mixed group between the university, the Cal State Fullerton, and some professionals and some non-professionals. And it's grown into being the largest orchestra founded in America in the last half century with a budget of over $20 million.
And that's unbelievable just in its own right, with orchestras and opera companies and people closing right and left and going into bankruptcy and strikes and all sorts of other things that happen all over the place. And here you are growing and growing and building and building.
Well, it's our connection with our community, but it's also an incredibly dedicated board, staff, and the wonderful, talented musicians of the Pacific Symphony who are really dedicated to developing a beacon of artistic integrity here in Orange County through the Pacific Symphony. And also, one of my big mantras is that an orchestra has to grow like an oak tree. It has to grow slowly and carefully. It cannot just sprout up, as we sometimes use that adage. The Pacific Symphony hasn't just sprouted up. Every step, every development, everything that we've done to add to our lives has been very, very market-driven. The people have asked for it. It's been carefully orchestrated so that the roots that are in the community, which really will help us maintain and stay a growing orchestra, are just as deep as what you see on the upper side. And our community has always come first. And as I think I mentioned earlier, you know, we want to be Orange County's beacon of music and of artistic integrity.
Well, you are. And the chorale along with you. And, you know, there's so many wonderful facets of all of that. We talked about this with John and with Rob about the chorale. Most symphony choruses are just the product of the symphony. And so when they need a chorus, they come in and do it. And for our chorale to have its own series and its conductor to be able to conduct the symphony and that just doesn't happen anywhere.
Well, but that's just another example of relationship building. I mean, my relationship with John was sealed from the very first time I met him. I realized here's an artist of utmost integrity.
He worships the ground you walk on.
And many of the most important pinnacle moments of the Pacific Symphony have involved the Pacific Chorale, whether it's the Passion of the Ramakrishna that we just heard that we're taking to Carnegie Hall, or whether it's the Vietnam Oratorio or the American Requiem, or so many of our Mahler 2s, the Mahler 8s, the Beethoven 9s, the Carmina Burana's, the Verdi Requiems, the Brahms Requiems. The list just goes on. It's just been an incredibly vital relationship that everyone's the winner. I mean, our subscription audiences, our community, their audiences, it's just been great. And so those kinds of relationship and building relationships within our community have been another reason that our strength has remained. It's remained.
Well, and people like Mary Wilson, who have been on the program, another one of your dear fans. We're all your dear fans. Face it, you're stuck with all of us.
But I just did Mahler 2 again with Mary, and I mean, if I could, I would just do only things with Mary. She's just that kind of singer,
you.
Yeah.
Yeah, the spirit that she brings. And she talked on the show about the day you called her on Thanksgiving to come down there, and she goes, but I've got a turkey in the oven. You know, those are the kind of moments you can't make up, you know.
No, but so many people have, you know, John Williams included, but James Newton Howard, our dear friend, a board member, when I gave my 25th anniversary to have Yo-Yo Ma and to have Long Long here and Itzhak Perlman, and this season we're having Andre Watts and Pinka Zukerman. I mean, I look at pictures of when Slava Rostropovich played with the Pacific Symphony. I mean, there are just so many incredible moments, and I'm leaving out many, and I'm sorry for all of the ones I'm leaving out, but I could go on. The list would be too long. The commissioned work, the composers we've befriended. I mean, I really want this to be an orchestra that not only steeps itself in the traditions of Haydn, Mozart, Beethoven, Brahms, and all the great classic music composers that we know and love, but also to be an orchestra that's forward-thinking and that creates music of our own.
Not every group commissions anything, you know, and you guys are commissioning things. You and I are talking about commissioning things for our cathedral opening. You know, that kind of vision forward that, you know, and it is a crapshoot, let's face it. You know, I mean, I've commissioned things in my life that I think, well, okay, you know, but others go on and they have a life and they're a gift to everyone and they're performed all the time.
Rostropovich, the great cellist, said the same thing. Every 7 cello concertos I commissioned, maybe 2 will have a life. But without those other 5, I would never have had those 2.
That's a great way of
And you have to think about that. Even in as you think of music history, not every work of this or that composer is memorable. I mean, not every piece is Beethoven's Ninth Symphony.
Right.
They're all great, but not all of them are the Ninth Symphony.
Well, not every great organ piece of Bach is fantastic.
Fantastic, you know, right.
There are moments of greatness, but the great ones couldn't be, you're quite right, couldn't be without all the other ones that led you there.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, how wonderful. This has just been such a treat for us, and we look forward to so many. I mean, listen to the names of people that you are not only working with and privileged to work with, but privileged to share with all of us. We get to hear and enjoy that partnership that you have with all of these great musicians.
I love that word, John, partnership, because it's amazing what can get accomplished if you don't really care who gets the credit. And we really want to be in partnership with Orange County, that we're a part of your daily fabric. And if there was a tsunami headed our way, the cry would be women, children, and the Pacific Symphony.
Symphony first,
yeah,
right, exactly.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Well, we are so looking forward to the dedication of our cathedral and having you here on our campus in so many ways, educationally, to the outreach and the connection with our children's choir, with our cathedral choirs, our diocesan choirs, the Pacific Chorale here. We just can't wait to have you part of the fabric of this cathedral as we open. And we're going to hear now a little bit of the Bruckner that we talked about that's coming next weekend, so we all get to enjoy it. But this is just a little bit of the second movement.
Yeah. The second movement is a kind of a fiery little movement. And in Bruckner's mind, it's the earthly gauntlet that one has to pass through in order to receive the beauty and light of eternity and the empowerment and the majesty of everlasting life.
Well, my friend, it has been such a pleasure to have you on the show. I can't thank you enough. I can't wait till you're back. I can't wait to do all sorts of projects together. And I am so happy to be able to call you colleague and friend. And until the next time, we encourage you, we insist that you go out and enjoy music in live performance. And you might want to start with the Pacific Symphony and Carl St. Clair. Carl, thank you for being with us.
And thank you, John.
Oh, my pleasure. And we'll see you next time on Music from the Tower.